essentially, this is more about questioning the philosophy that underpins the modern internet. Is it okay for Google and maybe two, three other large corporations to siphon off large parts of the profits and run all the dominant services by themselves?
Follow the money.
This is the podcast of the European Investigative Newsroom, Follow the Money. I'm your host, Emma de Chatignier, and as always, I'm joined by Follow the Money reporter and my colleague, Alexander Fanta in Vienna. Today, he's not only joining us as my co-host, but he's also the reporter behind the investigation that we're discussing. Good morning, Alex.
Morning, Emma.
In today's episode, we're going to discuss the world of big tech power. The EU wants to break up the dominant position that Google has in the market. The company has long defended its dominance as a product of innovation and success. But Follow the Money has revealed a different story. Behind the scenes, Google has been using business tactics that are extremely controversial. It also heavily lobbied the EU to make sure it stayed in control of the digital advertising market, which is the system that decides which ads you get to see online and who gets paid for them. Alex, the first time that we met was 2 years ago in Vienna. We were having a coffee and you were showing me this huge database that you were building. You were mapping all the lobby meetings between the commission and big tech companies, one of them being Google. Is this article, is that the result of your years of effort of collecting all those lobbying meetings?
I mean, in principle, I've been following Google's development and its kind of monopolistic practices for nearly a decade now as a tech reporter. But that, you know, that work, you know, kind of constantly asking the commission, can I have meeting minutes from your lobby meeting with Google a couple of years ago? I've been doing that a few years, and that the effort you mentioned, that database, was something we tried to do. And I am on Google's tracks ever since.
And to provide some more context, we're also joined by Simon van Dorpen, who's an expert on competition policy. Welcome, Simon.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Alex, your article showed a lot of things, but to dive into the topic, are we at a point now where the EU and the US are about to destroy Google?
Well, it's certainly a possibility that can't be ruled out. There's two, an antitrust case in the US and a competition case in the EU that are drawing to a close. In both of them, there has been a push for structural remedies for essentially breaking up Google, forcing the company to sell off parts of his business. Both of these investigations focus on Google's dominance in online advertising. It would be a very far-reaching step. You know, the European competition authorities haven't really ever done anything like that, like, you know, kind of targeting one of the biggest companies in the world and forcing it to sell off parts of its business. But it is a legal and political possibility. And, you know, this investigation couldn't come at a more fraught geopolitical climate where, you know, US-EU relations are very much under pressure. And that part of that pressure is also because of the EU's tech enforcement. So let's say all this is a very, very much nerve-wracking, high-tension thing that's going on there.
But what led us to being in this spot in the first place? What's wrong with Google's market power?
So Google has been a dominant company for more than 20 years now. It has dominated search. It has built out its dominance in many other fields. So, you know, the operating system that 3/4 of the people on this world have on their phone is the Google-dominated Android operating system. Google also has the largest video streaming platform in the world, YouTube. It has any number of services that people use every day, all day long. And that dominance has given Google a crucial edge in the one area it is earning most of its money with, which is online advertising. All data it collects from its different services, it then leverages to provide not just display advertising that you can buy on Google Search. So, you know, like search for, I don't know, new linens, you will get a little featured ad within Google Search. But Google also runs an advertising kind of like a stock exchange. You know, any advertiser can come in and say, I want to target people based on this data, and Google will connect them to the display where they can do that. So that makes Google an immensely powerful company, and one that by at least one estimate we heard attracts 1/4 of all online advertising revenue spent on this planet, which is just, you know, baffling.
But why is that such a problem? Why is it so problematic that Google has all this power?
So the charge by regulators has been that Google has abused its dominance and driven other smaller companies out of business. Google has also, over the last two decades, bought a lot of companies that might have become competitors or might have, you know, minimized its dominance. So essentially, the charge is that by using its you know, kind of the business practices that it has, Google has hurt competition and also thereby hurt consumers, because we're now paying maybe higher prices for things because advertisers have to pay more than it would have otherwise, or you know, publishers not earning the kind of money they should be earning from online advertising. So essentially, this is more about kind of, you know, questioning the philosophy that underpins the modern internet. Is it okay for Google and maybe two, three other large corporations to siphon off large parts of the profits and run all the dominant services by themselves?
And I think to break it down maybe in more layman's terms, if you look like, you know, 30, 40 years ago before the internet, the advertising market was something that you would find, you know, in newspapers mostly, but also, you know, you would have ads on the highway or wherever. And so you have two sides to that market. You have the newspapers itself, the publishers, they can sell the advertising space, or the people who own the billboards on the highway. And then you have the people who want to make publicity, like, I don't know what, Coca-Cola or whatever brand which wants to. But so this was a huge market for the newspaper business, for the media moguls. And they lost that because sort of Google has become, you know, the place where people start their searches on the internet. And so all the eyeballs of the people are on Google's pages and much less on the newspapers. So they have, as Alex said in the beginning, siphoned off the advertising market on the internet. So yeah, I think that's really underlying, is this tension between publishers and also Google.
And Simon, so at the heart of this whole discussion is a competition law, also known as antitrust rules. What does competition law do, or what is it meant to do?
Yes, it's all in the name, actually, in the two names that you mentioned, competition and antitrust. So competition law is there to promote fair competition, to make sure that companies can compete on the market. And antitrust rules is there to break up trusts, cartels, but also to prevent monopolies from abusing their dominant position, which is the case with Google.
And in this specific Google case, what competition rules does the EU say that Google might have broken?
So this case is about abuse of dominance. So as Alex eloquently explained, indeed, Google has a dominant position in this sort of ad tech market. All these different the ad exchanges, the supply side, the demand side. And the commission says that Google abused its dominance in these different parts of the market to make sure that their own products are getting a more favorable treatment compared to competitors.
So one way to think about this is there's an American antitrust scholar, Dina Srinivasan, who wrote a very influential paper a couple of years back. And what she was saying is that Google essentially, it runs the stock exchange, but it is also one of the biggest sellers on the stock exchange. So that amounts to a form of insider trading, where Google would, use the power of running the stock exchange to direct profits to its own properties rather than those of its competitors, which are mostly the publishers. And that, you know, in itself is already a big kind of abuse of market power. However, you know, Google fiercely contests that idea, says, no, it's not at all how it works. We don't have that kind of market power. And also, if we had, we wouldn't abuse it.
But when I hear this, isn't it also sort of like Google's right in a way? They managed to build this genius search engine and they really maximized what it could do for themselves. Isn't it also the case, well, newspapers, publishers were working on sort of an outdated business model, and Google managed to replace that with something that turned out to work far better? Isn't that sort of their right to do it like that then?
Yeah, I mean, it is their right to innovate and to gain market share and to become really, like, you know, dominant. There's nothing wrong actually with being a monopolist. What the rules prevent is that once you have that dominant position, that you abuse it. And that is what Google is caught doing over and over again. So what they do is they sort of conquer uncharted territory, which was the internet, but then they build a big wall around the internet to make sure that no one else can access it. And that is illegal. And that is the problem here.
And when you say that wall, what should I be thinking about?
So they, in different ways, they prevent competitors from entering the market. And all the different cases are all about that. For instance, they have an agreement with smartphone makers to make sure that their Google is going to be used as a sort of standard on your iPhone. So people who buy a smartphone, even if they would want to have another alternative, they're kind of forced into Google's ecosystem. And then that also forces advertisers to turn to Google because, no, there's no other alternative. Otherwise, nobody's going to watch your ads. So it's this kind of, you know, tricks that they use over and over again, just to siphon off all the traffic to themselves, basically.
There's also something called the tyranny of default. So I, on my phone, I have a different standard browser and a different search engine, but most people will never change that. So once you are the default browser on a device, and that default browser is a default search engine, that will be the search engine that almost everyone uses. And that's kind of, yeah, it's as Simon said, this is a key piece of the puzzle because that has helped Google immensely keep its dominance.
So it's clear to me from a competition point of view why Google's dominance right now should be considered problematic. But why is it something that I should also care about as a consumer that's not necessarily in any way affected by this business aspect per se?
I mean, some of the most popular kind of services that everyone uses every day are free, and they're provided by Google and you know, companies with a similar business model, you know, based on essentially exchanging your privacy by handing over personal data, and then you get a service. And that's a deal that some people are happy with, some people are less happy with. But the fact of the matter is you can't really change the terms of that deal because the companies are so powerful. And some people have even said that targeted advertising, you know, advertising based on personal data of people is in itself an evil business model because it enables the pervasive surveillance that, you know, the internet has brought with us, where every one of your moves is tracked via cookies or other devices and then, you know, kind of aggregated in a personal profile that you don't want anyone to see, but that's out there. But yeah, to sum it up, I think Google has brought decisive innovations, but it's also the question whether one single company should be allowed to harvest the spoils of that innovation for all times, or whether we should, you know, there should be a point where we say, okay, well, this has been good, this has been less good, let's change the system.
Yeah, just also, Emma, I don't know, it's hard to imagine what would have been if, you know, these other companies would have gotten a fair chance to compete. You know, now there may have been many great products which we never saw emerging if, you know, Google had allowed these companies or had allowed more competition in the space. I mean, Google itself has been made possible. First, there was the Microsoft case. I believe Google was originally, you know, one of the complainants against the dominance of Microsoft. They were also at the very start, you know, they were the company of do no evil. That was one of their sayings at the beginning. And they wanted open internet, innovation, etc. But gradually what we see is that power tends to lead to, you know, abuse of power. And definitely in the case of Google, that was established several times.
So all of these tactics have led to the EU wanting to break up Google's dominance. But Alex, what can authorities really do to actually enforce that?
I mean, it's tricky business. So in the past, you know, Google there were several major competition cases against Google by the European Commission. And in several of these cases, Google was ordered to pay a large fine. But the company was also prescribed certain changes to the way it operates, saying, for instance, okay, well, you have to allow this, you have to allow that. You're not, for instance, allowed to demote competitive price comparison services. But the question is, has Google really implemented these changes in good faith and actually given competitors more play on its platform? That is something that is fiercely contested. So what regulators can do is they can force Google to do certain things. They can, you know, kind of give it homework and then decide whether that homework was properly done and or hand out another fine or another remedy. And the ultimate remedy in competition law basically is to force a company to break up, to say, well, with the case of Google, you have to take your advertising exchange where you're kind of the intermediator in the market and sell that off. But it hasn't ever really done such a thing with a company that size in the past.
Just going back to the aspect of fines, because what I'm wondering, what kind of sums are we talking about here?
So in the past, Google has had fines of several billion euros at a time. I think it's more than 10 billion euros in competition fines that Google got from the European Commission over the last decade. So that's quite costly.
But does it actually hurt them?
So yeah, Google is one of the most profitable and also one of the largest companies by market capitalization in the world. So even though 10 billion euros might sound like a large sum, it is for Google essentially just the cost of doing business.
So the main aspect for the EU for wanting to break up Google's dominance has to do with this advertising business. Because if I understand it correctly, there is more than just the ads business, right? That's problematic here. But the main focus of the EU case is the advertising business.
The case is called Google Ads Tax. So this is really what it centers on. There have been other cases in the past, Google Shopping, Google Android, where, you know, there were allegations of other quite specific market abuses. But here we're talking about advertising, which is more than 70% of all its revenue. So Google has other, you know, it earns money with its app store. It earns money with all kinds of other business ventures, including self-driving cars and whatnot. But what Google really earns money off is advertising on the internet.
How did Google become so dominant in online advertising? What are the business tactics that got them there?
So many scholars today agree that there was one particular purchase that made Google, you know, such a impregnable fortress within this world. It was a purchase of a company called DoubleClick in 2008. DoubleClick was at that time already a very established ad exchange, and Google bought the company, it bought the technology, it also bought basically a market presence that was really complementary to what they were already doing. And that purchase, I think, which was also quite costly, well over $1 billion, was cleared by competition regulators back in the day. So, you know, even at that time, there were already concerns by rival companies saying, well, if you allow Google to do that, to combine its power in kind of selling advertising displays with the marketplace that DoubleClick offered, that will give it an impregnable advantage, a moat, as it is sometimes called, to its fortress. But regulators back then were still lacking, you know, kind of deeper technological understanding of the digital advertising space. So they were saying, well, you know, we're hearing this argument, but at the same time, we don't have conclusive evidence. So they allowed the purchase to go through. And ever since, Google has aggressively built on that dominance and used at sometimes questionable tactics. That's the finding of the U.S. court, not my personal opinion, to reinforce that dominance.
And are you saying that really it was maybe a mistake that the regulators allowed that purchase?
I spoke the other day to Bill Kovacic, who was the head of the Federal Trade Commission in the U.S., who at the time when the DoubleClick purchase went through, and Bill said, you know, this was a mistake. And if I had known then what I know now, I wouldn't have allowed it to go through.
And over the past decade, what has sort of been the pattern? Like if Google got fined for something, did they end up changing the very fact that they got fined for? Or was it more like them? Yeah, what you said before, Alex, cost of doing business and we continue doing the same practices.
Yeah, that's interesting. So how it works is that these decisions, indeed, they have a fine, but they also have a remedy. So Google not only has to pay up, but they also have to change their practices so that competition is allowed again in the market. So they always found ways to kind of do, in theory, what the commission asked them to do. But in practice, you know, this didn't go in the direction that the commission wanted it. And so they've been very handy at complicating things. And so by complicating things over the years, they have managed to buy time. And many people do believe that ultimately that has been the goal of Google, to buy time, because the courts, you know, both in the search case as in the Android case, the final decision is still upcoming there, but it all goes in the direction that the courts agree with the findings of the European Commission, with the huge fines imposed on Google, that they haven't played things, you know, according to the rules. And you start to wonder, like, is that really what Google, you know, did they really want the court to prove that they were right? Or did they just want to buy time? Because if it was the latter, if they just wanted to buy time, they have succeeded.
So when you're saying that Google was complicating things, what you really mean is that they were deliberately confusing the commission in order to get more time and further cement their dominance.
I mean, that is indeed what it looks like. It's a bit of a game of smoke and mirrors, indeed, that they've been playing for in several cases, in fact.
But despite all these sneaky tactics by Google, we're still at the point where they might be broken up. And just to sum up, what are the core elements now for the commission to still consider this breakup?
I think, you know, if you boil it down to that, it's essentially the question, can Google keep being the main intermediary of advertising, but also, you know, one of the biggest sellers of display ad space? And, you know, is that a conflict of interest that can somehow be addressed with the case, saying, for instance, you need to do X, Y, and Z to manage the conflict of interest, or you need to sell off parts of your business to take it out completely?
So in the past, it has always been disputed whether the commission could really break up Google under the normal competition rules. But then a huge development took place. The Digital Markets Act was passed, a big new rule book in which the commission basically bundled all its experience of the past 10 years. Very important in those were the Google cases, but also with other big tech companies. And there explicitly there was the possibility, if Google wouldn't, you know, end up doing what the commission asked it to, is that they could break it up. So now that possibility is clearly there, according to the law. But of course, the political difficulty remains. And in the past, even under Democrats in the US, the commission or EU people have always been reluctant to break up an American, one of the biggest American companies. They thought, you know, that's something the US also has very good antitrust enforcement. That is actually where the whole discipline started. So they were like, yeah, it's actually up to them to do this. But they never did. And so the commission was also has always been afraid and is afraid until this day to, you know, touch an American company in such a profound way, although that is now legally possible.
At the same time, there's a similar case unfolding in the US. Are the grounds for the case the same in the US as in the EU, or are there differences between those approaches?
I mean, there's differences in how the case unfolded, but they were really run quite in parallel. And I believe there was also quite a bit of exchange of information between you know, the regulators of both sides of the Atlantic. What is fundamentally different between the US case and the UK case is the political situation. Europe is dealing with a foreign major multinational corporation, which is Google. For the US, this very much plays out on its home turf, and there is, you know, different political philosophies over how much you want to regulate or even confront companies like Google. So the Trump administration has been you know, vacillating between different poles on this. Some parts of, you know, Trump's MAGA base want to confront and break up big tech companies, want to curb their power. Other parts say, well, this is, you know, this is genuinely in the national interest to have these large tech corporations. And indeed, some of the tech companies have fallen in line with Trump and been quite vocal of their support of him, you know, like Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos, Sundar Pichai of Google showed up at Trump's inauguration in January and, you know, kind of put the weight of their economic power behind him, at least metaphorically. So it remains to be seen whether that political dimension has an impact on the ongoing investigation, both in the US and the EU.
But so basically the US does have the same concerns as the EU, yet Trump is not necessarily happy with the EU trying to actually confront Google, right?
Exactly. So Trump has said time and again, and his allies have also said that they're unhappy with European attempts to meddle with US companies, even if they have plans to do the same thing at home. Trump has, you know, kind of said, done an angry tweet angry post on Truth Social a couple of months back saying, you know, that Europe has fined Google enough. It should be left alone. We don't quite know what that means when you look at the current competition case, but it is a force that needs to be reckoned with.
Yeah. Also, the U.S. I think we can start to have some serious doubts about how the Department of Justice over the past few months has been instrumentalized by the Trump administration. Department of Justice, as the FTC, plays a major role in antitrust enforcement. So let's see if, you know, like, what happens to these Google cases and how the administrations in the US keep enforcing those cases. Maybe there is a related deal with Google on some completely different topic that it shouldn't. I don't think at this point there is any evidence that it did, but I think in the Trump era, these things should be taken into account. So I think the EU is pretty much on its own now.
And so Trump expressing his dissatisfaction of the EU handling things in certain ways. Have we also seen the EU backpedaling on certain decisions as a result of that?
So far, they haven't made any fundamental concessions. They have delayed a couple of announcements for political reasons, or at least that's what some news reports suggest. But no, I mean, the EU is coming with another decision under the Digital Markets Act against Google. They seem to keep ramping up the pressure, and let's see if they will one day use this these competition cases or these DMA cases as a card in a bigger political negotiations. But so far, they haven't.
And so to come back to the question that we also started this episode with, so is the EU now about to break up Google? Is that where we stand right now?
Depends on whether the European Commission eventually musters up the political will to take a very, very bold step forward, or whether it will be try to introduce more cautious, more kind of measured remedies. It is fundamentally a political question.
More so than a legal question.
I think, you know, there is many things you can do under the law, but what you ultimately decide to do is politics.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And the politics so far, what we see from von der Leyen is that she's been, you know, pretty submissive to Trump, just careful not to, you know, anger him. There's been quite a lot of criticism against that, for instance, with the trade deal. But you know, some other people say that's the best way to deal with Trump. What is for sure is that many business leaders in Europe and many political leaders would be extremely disappointed if the Commission decides not to enforce its own laws out of political considerations. So these two may one day clash, but I agree with Alex that probably the political factor will be decisive.
And with that, we'll leave it for today's episode. Thank you so much for joining us, Simon. And Alex and I will be back soon for another episode. And you can, of course, find the full story by Alex in the episode description. Thank you.
You've listened to the podcast of Follow the Money. Our watchdog journalism is funded by our members. Subscribe and support European investigative journalism.